another amazing segment coming up. I believe we have Dr. John Ashton on the show for us this morning on The Breakfast Show. Are you there, John?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you.
It's great to have you here. You're with Daniel Livingston and Cal. We know each other, John, from outside of the studio, but I believe that you are here to talk to us about evolution. Does that sound right?
Yes, that's right. Some of the problems with the theory of evolution that people may not be aware of.
Yeah. So I'm glad that you're talking about the problems of evolution. I'm hoping that we'll get to talking about what's a better alternative by the end of it. But let us know. We want to dig deeper. What are the problems with evolution? Yeah. Tell us.
I think one of the things, main things, is that evolution is a very, very broad term. And evolution does occur in terms of living things, but not the type of evolution that produces a new organism. In other words, evolution, Darwin's theory of evolution, can't explain the origin of all the different types of animals and bacteria and plants and fish and so forth that we have. And this is a subtle difference. So we do see changes that occur. For example, over time, species can grow larger. You know, parts of their fur can change colour, the thickness of fur, this sort of thing. We can have colour changes. These minor things can occur. And Darwin proposed a theory where essentially he thought there would be mutations and then natural selection, environmental factors would select out the best mutation to survive. And this essentially underpins the theory.
So what you just explained there of natural selection based on mutations and you know, the mutations that are the best adapted to the environment, or even the expression of genes best adapted to the environment, that all sounds like it is reasonable. It actually happens. Is that right? So that's the microevolution that you're talking about that actually is a real thing, that, you know, that there's no dispute about that. Is that right?
Well, no, it's a half-truth.
Okay.
And this is where people get caught.
Yeah.
And so natural selection, we definitely observe that. That's a real thing.
Yep.
And the classic example during the Industrial Revolution, a lot of soot around, light colored moths were more readily eaten by the birds. They could be seen more easily on the dark background. And so there was selection. So essentially most of them died out. And later on, however, because the dark moths were still carrying some genetic information, once we cleaned up the environment, they slowly came back. So natural selection certainly works, but the problem is mutations don't produce new organisms. This is the important thing. So what Darwin assumed was that there would be mutations would occur and that these mutations would accumulate to the point that eventually a new organism forms.
Now, and that's never been observed, right?
That doesn't occur, yes. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One of the reasons is that the number of mutations required to produce actually a totally new biochemical pathway or a new body part, you know, a new horn, or, you know, for a pig to develop a wing or something like this and be able to fly, is an enormous amount of mutations. And the other thing is that we find in living systems, there are a whole lot of systems to actually stop mutations accumulating and eliminate that. And, you know, the classic example is in sexual reproduction. We inherit code or genes from both our parents, and the idea from the male and female gamete cells, and the idea is there that if there's damage in one, a mutation in one, hopefully the other parent won't have that damage and therefore it is corrected. But the other thing is that scientists have been doing research in this area because they've been looking for a long time to try and justify the theory of evolution. Now, of course, this isn't just usually taught to students, but this is research they've been pushing for a long time. Now, one of the top geneticists in the world is a guy, Dr. Eugene Koonin. He's head of the genetics research area for the National Institute of Health in the United States. Back in 2007, he published a very, very interesting paper where he was looking at the probability of mutations occurring. And he did some calculations and calculated that the probability of a very primitive replication system occurring that would enable molecules that had accumulated to form some sort of organism to reproduce, right? The chances of that occurring were one part in 10 to the power of 1,018. Whoa, now, this is a this is an unbelievable number. So to give you an idea, and to give listeners a bit of an idea, Avogadro's number is 10 to the power 23. So that is the number, say, for atoms in a mole, or the molecular weight of a substance in grams. So if you, say, had a tablespoon of water, or a dessert spoon of water probably, that would have about 10 to the 24, a power 24 atoms in it. And so you imagine there's a lot of atoms just in a teaspoon. Now try and imagine how many atoms there are in all the oceans of the world. And then just try to imagine how many atoms there are in all the matter in the universe, in all the giant stars and so forth. Well, scientists have calculated that, and it's only 10 to the 80. In other words, exponentially, numbers increase enormously beyond our mind once we use. Now, if there are only 10 to the 80 atoms in the universe, just imagine how many, if you had as many universes as there are atoms in the universes, and you had all those atoms, that would only be 10 to the power 160. So just imagine 10 to the power 1,018, and the chances of finding a specific atom in amongst all those atoms in, or, you know, it's just an unimaginable. Now, that's the probability of just the amount of atoms lining up to make a replication system.
Yeah, right.
And that was published back in 2007. Now, the other thing is, so as well,
has that paper made a significant impact in the public debate, in the, you know?
It's scary, and the scientists just tend to ignore it, and they say, well, it happened.
Yeah, right.
Okay, but really it's impossible, and that's the point that he points out. Another thing he points out too is that, say, you had the chemical reactions to form the DNA, the original DNA, right, or some sort of primitive DNA. DNA by itself is useless unless you have a code reader to read the DNA, and that's a ribosome. Now, the structure of the ribosome was actually only worked out about the same time, actually, and it probably inspired Koonin to put out his paper, and that was back in 2007. And a number of chemists from several universities won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for elucidating the structure of a ribosome. So only over 300,000 atoms make up this little mini machine that can read the DNA and assemble proteins. It's an amazing machine. So again, the probability of that forming, a machine forming at the same time that can read the DNA code. But the fascinating thing is that the DNA code encodes the code to make a ribosome, but it's useless unless there is already a ribosome to read the code. Right. Now, another thing. Another thing that people don't realize, and this often happens with biologists and these people that promote the theory of evolution, zoologists and this sort of thing, is that the reactions, chemical reactions required to produce these biochemical systems that are essential for life actually don't occur in nature. They can't happen in nature. Just like you can put a piece of platinum in sulfuric acid, it will never react with sulfuric acid. The reaction just doesn't go. And the same thing with these biochemical reactions that are required to actually form living systems only occur in pre-existing living systems because require specific compounds such as enzymes. And it was very interesting that one of the top synthetic chemists in the world, Dr. James Turr, is one of the most highly cited chemists, so that means that his research is quoted by other scientists, right? He's a leader in his field. And he's a very, very strong creationist, and he points out that, you know, these reactions don't occur, and he was sick of people rubbishing him and saying, oh, no evolution occurs, you know, it's where so many papers have been published on evolution. And so he issued a challenge and he said, okay, he said, if you can show me the chemical reactions that occur and demonstrate to me that they occur, that can produce these biological compounds, I will delete all my posts and I will stop talking about it. Now, there was only one scientist that took up his challenge, and that was Dr. Lee Coonan from St. Andrews University, another chemist.
Yeah.
They had a big debate at Harvard University. You can watch it online. And again, all this is Cronin, not Coonan. Coonan was the first scientist. This guy's Lee Cronin. All Cronin could again suggest was that there were probabilities, but again, he couldn't come up with any known chemical reactions to produce the biological building blocks for evolution to occur. So these are one of the major problems that biologists have in trying to explain evolution and the possibility of new life parts forming, new organisms.
Dr. Ashton, we've just got a minute or so to go. Do you want to give us a summary of the three issues that you've identified? I think it's three. So there's the...
So mutations don't produce new body, but the mutations can't accumulate.
Is it true to say that mutations don't even produce new genetic information, let alone a new organism? Is that true?
Mutations can change reactions by deleting data, or they can duplicate existing data. They can build a little bit, but they can't build sufficiently to produce enough code to produce a substantial new body part, and that's never been observed. Yeah. The only explanation is supernatural creation.
Yeah, it's a
We are evidence of the supernatural. We are evidence of a supernatural process occurring.
Awesome. That's great, Dr. John Ashton. And you've shared with us several insights as to how evolution is just an impossible theory, untenable completely. So thank you very much, Dr. Ashton. We really appreciate your insight and wisdom.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
Except Scuffy and Lawson aren't here right now, and it's myself, Kalani, filling in for Lawson, and Daniel, you're filling in for Scuffy.
Welcome. Good morning.
So good to be here this morning. We're both very excited to be on the radio this morning, and with you listening and sharing and listening. And I believe we're coming up to a quiz. What have you got for us, producer Shell?
All right, quiz number three. Are you ready? You got your thinking caps on, everyone. Let's play the game. Who built a special room for when the prophet would visit? Who built a special room for when the prophet was passing by and would stay the night?
Wow.
You've given three out of three tough questions, producer Shell.
I agree.
This is not a hard one. Uncle Arthur, the stories, so many fantastic.
I can remember the story.
We do not know this person's name. They're referred to as something.
All right. You know what? Like last time, I thought it was really hard, and the audience just smashed it. And
that's right.
You as a listener, I mean, everyone got it correct except for me. And so this time, I'm sure I have no idea. But hey, surprise me, guys! Surprise!
We've already got a correct answer bouncing in.
Well, oh, here done. We go.
Yeah. Valet is quick on the mark, and oh, yes. Well done. Well, Valmet's got the person actually who the room was made for, but we were asking who built the room.
Well done. Good answer, though. Good answer.
So, yeah, who built the room for when the prophet would visit? And so, I'll give another clue then. So, yeah, it was the prophet Elisha. So, yeah, who built the room for him?
What made me think, oh, man, this is a tough question, is because no name was coming to me, and I think that's because we don't have a name, is that right?
They're referred to as the blank of blank.
Yes, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Interesting. Well, thanks for playing, everyone.
I've seen a few in there from Tochi. Well done. Our number here is 0491-064-669. I'll just read that question one last time. Who built a special room for when the prophet would visit? And that prophet was Elisha.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks.
Well, we've got a special room for visitors at our place, and I'm sure building special rooms for visitors is something that maybe you can relate to as well. We have a special place for you in our Bible study this morning, and we're transitioning to our review of yesterday's Sabbath school lesson right now on The Breakfast Show.
The 20 million movement is our Encountering God section. That's right, where we 20 million people around the world have all studied this, and we are going to do it with them.
Does that make you feel insignificant? You're one of 20 million people? No, that makes you very significant
in that
there are 20 million other people studying with you this morning. Daniel chapter 3. So yesterday we looked at Daniel chapter 2, and we'll just recap briefly. What was the message of Daniel chapter 2? Kalani, I'm putting you on the spot here. But yeah. Daniel chapter 2, have you ever shared that with somebody in Bible study?
I love Daniel chapter 2. The whole book of Daniel is oh, man, hits the spot. I will never get sick of Daniel, and especially Daniel chapter 2. So we've got a huge statue. A statue of a man. It's got arms and legs and chest and thighs and feet. And each part of the statue is made up of different metals. And they all represent different kingdoms. And they all represent different periods of time throughout Earth's history, leading right up to the time that we are in now, which is the end of time before Jesus is going to come back again. And then it says that God's kingdom will be set up at the end of the timeline of the metals.
So today, as we transition into Daniel chapter 3, we're really looking at Nebuchadnezzar's response to this prophecy that the prophet Daniel shared with him in response to this dream that he dreamt, and he couldn't even remember it, and he asked his wise men to explain it. They said, well, tell us a dream and we might be able to make something up. Well, they didn't quite say it like that, but he wasn't going to share the dream, and so they said, look, we can't tell you the interpretation, and that kind of spoiled their guise as wise men, and they were sentenced to death. And Daniel saved the day by tapping into the wisdom of heaven to explain his dream. And as you said, Cal, that dream explained the future. It was a prophetic dream that outlined the kingdoms of the world.
Right.
And the response of Nebuchadnezzar at the end of chapter 2, can you read that for us, Cal, in chapter 2,
Absolutely.
Verses 46 to 48?
Yeah, sure. It says this, "Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face, prostrate before Daniel, and commanded that they should present an offering and incense to him. The king answered Daniel and said, 'Truly your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret.' Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. Also, Daniel petitioned the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king."
All right. So at the end of chapter 2, would you say that Nebuchadnezzar was a proud, arrogant king who said, yep, this is me, I'm that head of gold, I'm going to be the boss of the universe, everyone's going to serve me?
Right. No, not at all. He seems to be
humbled.
Humbled, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he gave praise and respect to the God of heaven, and he elevated the messenger of God, Daniel, and his three friends. But then do you think after some time, do you think he stayed humble, or do you think that pride got to him? What do you think happened next, Cal?
I'm excited to find out. We find out in chapter 3,
am I correct? Chapter 3, and that's where we're heading. Do you want to read for us? Let's read it, and we'll comment as we go. So read chapter 3, verse 1, and we'll see what happens not too long after this dream, but not immediately after it. Nebuchadnezzar, let's just say he might have had a bit of a change of heart and may not have been so humble anymore.
All right, let's jump into it. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold. Here we go. It starts quickly in chapter 3. Whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. That's a big statue, by the way. A very, very tall statue. He set it up in the plain of Jura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of their image, which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up.
Okay, just let's stop there for a minute.
Okay.
This image, it was kind of like the image of the dream, wasn't it? Except the image of the dream had a few different medals. How many medals did this one have?
It just says gold.
And pretty massive too. Yeah. So he must have been a wealthy king to have had access to enough gold to make a massive image of gold.
Right.
Just gold all the way through. Do you think he was trying to say something? Do you think he was trying to say, look, this prophecy might have had a few different kingdoms coming up after mine. What do you think he was saying by just making it just gold?
Well, this is his response. You know, we're not sure how long it's been since that Daniel's revealed the statue of many metals, but obviously he's had some time to think about it, and his thoughts have been juicing around a little bit, and he's come to the conclusion, actually, I don't think there'll be anyone else after me. I think I am the end of the age. I am that last kingdom.
Yeah, I'm it. Everyone's got to come to me, and he called everyone in. And they'd all gathered around, and they were looking at this image that he'd set up. And then what happened? Keep reading from verse 4.
Verse 4 says, "Then a herald cried aloud, 'To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, the psaltery, the symphony, in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fiery furnace.'" Mm. So at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, and lyre in symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the golden image, which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up.
So at the end of chapter 2, King Nebuchadnezzar was worshipping God. He was saying,
right.
Yeah, you know, God reveals secrets. He can tell the future. That he was saying God was pretty amazing. Now he's got everyone to come and worship him himself.
Right.
Nebuchadnezzar, you're pretty amazing. And he's changed the timeline of the future. It's just going to be gold all the way. And and they're saying, King, live forever.
He seems to be trying to overwrite God's intentions here.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, So keep going in the story, and we're going to see there comes a bit of a conflict is coming up. Keep reading, from verse eight, or wherever you're up to.
"Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, 'O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, the psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the... There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up.
Interesting. They were singled out as not just three young men, certain Jews. So, yeah, I think the people of Israel, Judah, Jews as they're known, have been picked on throughout history, sometimes unfairly. And sometimes, you know, maybe the Jews haven't always been living up to the light that they've been given. But in this case, they were probably unfairly being picked on. A bit of racial stereotyping there, and yeah. So these guys weren't bowing down to this image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. We're going to come back to see what happens in a little bit, but. Before we do that, I just want to focus on Nebuchadnezzar, where he's going here. He is full of pride. He thinks he's number one. Does this remind you of anyone else in the Bible who went through a bit of a period of I'm going to lift myself up?
Yeah.
Isaiah chapter. Where are you going, Carl?
I think I know what you're talking about, Dan. Yeah. I think this is exactly the way that Satan would have fallen, or Lucifer, as an angel, angel of God, would have fallen and turned himself into the devil by choosing to lift himself up by pride and because of his beauty.
Yeah. Do you want to look up Isaiah 14?
Absolutely.
And Ezekiel 28 is another passage that really describes this. But we might just look at Isaiah 14 here this morning now. And the pride of Nebuchadnezzar lifting himself up and wanting everyone to come and worship him as the king that's going to live forever, it really reminds me of this passage in Isaiah chapter 14. And I think it's from about verse 14, is it, Cal?
Verse 12 to 14.
Yep.
How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High.
So is that what Nebuchadnezzar's doing here? I will. Look at me. Come worship me. I'm going to be the king that lasts forever. My kingdom is going to go forever, and I'm going to be lifted up in front of the whole world. And he brought the whole world in. To worship this image and to really elevate his pride.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
He even tries to overwrite whatever it is that God had planned for different kingdoms to rise and nations to fall. You know, it's very, very quickly we see that switch from, oh, how he's exalting Daniel and he revealed the dream and all these things, and it just switches straight back. He goes back to his old self before he knew who God was. Exactly right. He starts exalting himself. Yeah, it's very similar, the relationship between Lucifer as a fallen angel and King Nebuchadnezzar as the head of gold.
We're going to come back to what happens with these three faithful men who didn't bow down to the image in a little bit. But can you relate? Have you ever had a period of your life where you're just like, yep, I'm number one. Everyone's got to come and do it my way. Everyone's got to come and worship me, serve me. We may not have ever been the king of a large kingdom like Nebuchadnezzar was for Babylon, but we all still battle with pride. I know I battle with pride. You know, I sometimes with my kids at home think that I'm number one. And we're going to find out just what happens. And so the passage that you read from Isaiah shows that people that are proud don't always end up in the best place.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
And I believe we've got a quiz answer. I sure hope so. Producer Shell, can you fill me in, please, and help me out here? I'm dying to know the answer.
Okay. So the story is that of the Shunammite woman, the woman of Shunem, and the prophet would travel through there regularly. And so they decided to build a room for him onto their house so that every time he passed through, he would be able to break up his stay and stay with them in his own special room. And he was so blessed by it that he promised them a child. And she had never had a child. And so then she was able to have a son. And yeah, unfortunately, that son died when he was quite a young lad, and Elisha brought him back to life again. So double miracle for that family, for their blessing that they did for him.
Wow, and I'm just looking at some of these answers that have come through here. Thank you. Yeah, Brayden, great job answering that question. We appreciate all of your answers. You guys are really doing well today. Not like me, or Daniel's doing a little bit better than me, but yeah, I mean, appreciate it. Continue.
Let's
to
see how you go on this last one.
Yeah, 100%. So we've got, you got another one for us,
Shell? I got one last one for the day. How many pieces of furniture were in the most holy place of the tabernacle? How many pieces of furniture were in the most holy place of the tabernacle? And Daniel has that one correct.
What about this?
Cal's got it right. Yes. Well done. You both are right on the money with that one. Yeah.
Please send through all of the answers for that question. That's a very good question, Shell. And message them through to 0491-064-669.
All right. And I'll give that question one more time. And there's a little trick to it, so you just got to make sure you listen. How many pieces of furniture were in the most holy place of the tabernacle?
I think all your questions are being tricky this morning, Shell. You've tested us to see whether we're awake.
Yes, that's right. We get some people who say, these questions are too easy. We get some who say they're too hard. I try to do some easy and some hard, but I'd say that these ones are pretty much all on the same level except for the first one, which was pretty hard, I think.
I was thinking pretty hard on that last one. Like the thing that came to mind was woman of Shunem. And then I'm thinking, is the answer the man of Shunem? Or Mr. Woman of Shunem?
Mr. Shunem?
Or does he have a name? I thought it was her
initiation, so she gets the credit.
All right.
Okay. I'm sure that he was the one who was actually laying the bricks by brick by brick, but they did it together. But it was her desire to build him a room.
So we're going to find out how many pieces of furniture in the most holy place fairly soon. But before we do, we are going to keep going with our Bible study in Daniel chapter 3. And Shell, there was a name for that that's escaped me for the moment. The 20 million
movement. Yeah.
20 million movement. Awesome. Yeah. So you are a part of the 20 million movement this morning as we study through the story of Daniel chapter 3. Now, we're going to be doing Daniel chapter 3 again tomorrow and getting into the resolution of this whole story. And the song that we just heard just before that quiz was actually gave the resolution. I really like it. It was the first time I'd heard that song, and it's pretty cool. But we're just going to get to this point of conflict this morning, where Nebuchadnezzar had set up this big image, this gold image, in contrast to the prophetic image of Daniel 2, where God had outlined the future kingdoms of the world, that gold would be succeeded by silver, which is another kingdom that would replace the kingdom of Babylon. But King Nebuchadnezzar decided that Babylon should last forever, so he set up this image just of gold and demanded that everyone worship him. So we left it before the break, where there were three young men who didn't worship this image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And we're going to see what happens here. We're going to build this story up. We're not going to get to the full resolution today. That's coming tomorrow. But we're going to see how King Nebuchadnezzar responds to these three men that didn't bow down to his image. Where are we up to, Cal?
We're up to verse 13 in Daniel chapter 3, if you as a listener are following along. I'm very excited to see what happens to these young men who did not bow to the image. So let's find out. It says this: Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready, at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, the psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?"
Man, so that's pretty defiant. Just a little while ago, at the end of chapter 2, he was giving praise to God who could reveal secrets, who could foretell the future, and he was worshiping God. And now he's saying, you need to worship me. And who's going to deliver you if you don't follow what I tell you to do? He's very defiant, very arrogant. You picking up anything else from that passage, Cal?
Oh, I mean, it must be scary, right? It must be scary. I mean, it's like they've there's like a second chance. It's almost like he expects them to just kind of give in the second time. Like the first time, maybe they were clueless or something. He's like, who? How? Like, he can barely believe it. He can barely believe that nobody bowed down. You know, the command is the fiery furnace is awaiting them if they don't bow down. So he must just be in a big surprise. Yeah.
He's the most powerful man in the world at that time. And here these three men are just defying his authority and power. Who would the equivalent most powerful person in the world be right now?
Oh, I can think of a few names, you know. The Donald Trump might come up, or...
Yeah, yeah. So this would be like you and me just defying Donald Trump. Not Elon Musk with all his wealth defying it, Donald Trump, but... You just three men that the king didn't even know their name. Like, he's like, who are you guys? What? I'll give you another chance. Maybe you didn't know what was going on. Maybe you didn't understand. Mm. But you guys, you need worship or you're in that fiery furnace. How did they respond? What did they say? Do you want to read that, Cal?
Yeah, I'd love to. Verse 16 says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up."
Hmm. Man, is that arrogant defiance? Or is that humble defiance?
Oh, good question. Humbly, it's as humble as you can be. I mean, there's a furnace and it's heated. What do you think?
Certainly they're strong and courageous. They know that they're not going to they're not going to bow down. They're not going to follow the king's command. What they don't know, though, is whether they'll perish in the fire or not. They just know they're not going to serve his gods or worship the gold image.
They definitely sound very sure of themselves. There's lots of, in verse 17, if that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, then it says he will deliver us. He will deliver us from your hand.
Interesting. Do you think that their confidence in deliverance is that they're going to be delivered from this fiery furnace, or... A broader deliverance that oh king, you're not gonna win this battle for our allegiance, that God is going to deliver us from your tyranny. He may not deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, but he's going to deliver us from you. Is that kind of what they're saying?
Yeah. It sounds like God is able. So he's saying simply, God is able to do anything.
Mm.
God is powerful enough to override, you know, he created us, he created this world. The laws of physics, the laws of science, the laws of the fact that the furnace should theoretically melt us and destroy us, he can override the whole thing. He says he's able to. But then the will is he will deliver us. I think that, very interestingly, we see in the Bible faithful men of God and faithful people of God, they sometimes will do the right thing and God will be with them, but it doesn't always mean that God will preserve them in the way that we, in the flesh, in the body. Sometimes when he delivers us, he's delivering us not just from the suffering and pain of this world and the death of this world, and he's saving us so that we will live immortally and live forever, but actually the way he's delivering us is he's giving us faith to lead a faithful life into the next life where we have mansions laid up for us in heaven.
Yeah, so the Bible has many promises for us as Christians, as Bible believers, to cling on to, that we will be delivered, that God will reward us with long life and, you know, with salvation, etc. But, you know, every Christian who's ever lived, pretty much, has passed away.
Wow. True.
So these promises need to be understood in their eternal significance, their meaning in the great meta-narrative of the conflict over our eternal destiny. And God will deliver his faithful followers every time for eternity. And that's what these three men were confident in. They had no question whatsoever that God would deliver them out of the hand of the king in their eternal well-being, their eternal destiny.
I guess the question is why? Why would God allow for some to suffer, some not to suffer, and some to die and some to stay alive? And it's very interesting. There's a range of answers. But God has his hand over the whole thing. And, you know, the beauty that there is in seeing a miracle performed. And we're going to find out what actually happens to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they get thrown into the burning fiery furnace. But there is beauty in them if they are preserved. There's a beautiful experience where God's majesty can be witnessed. And there's also a sense of nobility and a sense of, there's a witness to all of the nation of Babylon and all the people present when they get thrown into the burning fiery furnace if God doesn't preserve them. There's a beautiful sight to behold there in the fact that someone's dying for their faith, they're putting their life on the line for something that they truly, truly believe in, and that would bring many people closer to God.
Yeah, the number of martyrs that have given their lives for their faith, at least Stephen, the first martyr of the early Christian church, and then the martyrs through the Reformation era, there's been so many martyrs through history, and the shedding of the blood of martyrs has done probably more for the spreading of the gospel than, you know, preaching powerful sermons. There's, you know, preaching powerful sermons can also be really, really great. But seeing the faithfulness of God's followers prepared to give their lives for the faith that they hold.
I love your point, Daniel, because it's so true. You know, that there's so many quotes by historians that say the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church.
Yes,
and let me just be like clear. This is not God's will. God's will is never for anyone of his children to perish. However, he doesn't like seeing them suffer. He doesn't like seeing them die. Very clearly, this brings God to tears. However, for the benefit of humanity and for the benefit of the free will of human beings, he allows these things and permits them to continue in such a way where he gives us the faith to endure. He has mansions laid up for us in heaven. And we just know that in his hands, we will be okay. In his hands, we will be okay.
So it's interesting. The reason that God dealt with this situation in the way that he did, and we'll find out tomorrow. We'll leave you in suspense, although the song kind of did give it away. the way that God responded here is probably more for the benefit of Nebuchadnezzar, and we'll find out what eventually happened in his life, than for the benefit of these three men. Although we'll find out. We'll see what happens tomorrow. But I want you as listener to be assured that in situations where we're facing, you know, imminent destruction or imminent catastrophe of some sort, that God is faithful. He will deliver us.
Amen.
Always, for eternity.
Mm.
Whether it's deliverance from the suffering of what's immediately before us in the way that we would like or not, we don't know, and they didn't know. And so that's what their response was here. our God is able and he will ultimately deliver. But if not, as in if he won't deliver us right here and now, just let it be known that we've made up our minds. We're going to be faithful to God. We will serve him no matter what. Now, in the little bit of time that we have left this morning, Kalani, I want us to think about how we can apply this to our lives today. Those three men could have just made an excuse like everyone's bearing down. I'm not going to bear down to the image and worship in my heart, but I'm just going to bear down and say a prayer to God, or I'm just going to bear down and do up my shoelace. They didn't do that. They stood standing, obviously being different from the people around them. What would be a modern equivalent of that? How can we be tempted to just go along with the crowd, you know, doing something that it's not really what we want to do? But
yeah, I think there's a range of interesting examples I could use. I think of possibly bullying and just being the one to witness instead of standing up for the right. And I also think, it could overlap into our jobs and our workplaces and standing up for the people around us. We could possibly just be a witness instead of join in and put a stop to things. What do you think, Daniel?
It's tempting to just go along with the crowd in so many, you know, worshipping sport or going along with maybe music or entertainment. That's not really what we would think is the right thing. But these men stood up. They stood up. They were stood up to be counted. They were different.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
I believe, Producer Shell, I think you've got another quiz for us or a quiz answer. Am I
just
correct?
A quiz answer because the show is almost over. No more time for quizzes. You'll have to wait till tomorrow for another one.
Oh, cool.
But our answer...
Read the whole Bible for it to be ready for tomorrow's quiz, Shell.
Our answer for that question was one. Singular. One piece of furniture was in the most holy place. Lots of people answered for all of the different pieces that were in the sanctuary, but we just wanted to know how many were in the most holy place of the sanctuary.
What if someone thought that was a trick question and put three for Aaron's rod that budded in the...
It's not a piece. It's inside of the furniture. Do you count your shirt as furniture, even though it's in the drawer?
Or the ceremonial law that was leaning against the ark.
The ceremonial law leaning against the ark.
It was leaning on the outside of the ark. Wasn't in. Anyway, I'm just being extra tricky here.
Are indeed.
Yeah.
That's not furniture. But, we did have a question about the mercy seat. Is that another piece of furniture?
That was interesting.
Actually the lid to the ark. So it's part of the same piece of furniture.
Well, good way to look in, read between the lines there and really pick up some extra details. So thanks, Braden, for that.
For sure. That if you want to know, I mean, it talks about the Ark of the Covenant in many places, but Exodus 26:34 is a good description.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome.
Cool. Now, we have a giveaway that we are still, there is still time to text in the code word ASK to 0491-064-669. For your copy of Daring to Ask for More. We've had fun this morning, and time has rapidly gone away.
And you know what else that they can also send in to that text number for? The birthday prize.
Ah, the birthday prize, yes.
There are several books there, I think, in front of you. On the table we have the birthday prize all packed up together here.
Yes. So what have I got here? I've got some interesting, some pretty cool stuff here. I've got a pencil case. I've got a key ring. I've got some vitamin D, and I've got three books. There's Truths to Live By. There is As Bright as the Stars, and that's a story of dauntless disciples of the Reformation. And there is Sabbath Gift, Discover the Gift of Rest for a Healthier and Happier Life. Books by Bruce Manners, Junha Kim, and I'm going to butcher this name, Sukashini Gunatalik.
That's not bad. You did pretty good. I think she'd forgive you for that one.
Gunatalik.
And I'm also looking at these vitamin D tablets. They're actually made from shiitake mushrooms. And so, this would be very important to, I think this would be good coming around this time of year. It'd be good to
Boost your immune system,
especially with something natural, plant-based, made from shiitake mushrooms.
Given that it's winter and there's less sunshine, and the sunshine that we do get, we're all covered up in long sleeves.
Yeah.
So we need some vitamin D the oral way instead of the skin intake method.
Yeah, so if your birthday's in June, send in 0491-064-669. You are running out of time for that because we do want to do the draw this Friday.
This Friday.
For the birthday prize, and that way we can still post it and get it to the winner by the end of the month so that they will at least receive it within their birthday month.
Please do not miss out on that. If your birthday is this month, please.
So if your birthday is the 30th of June, you can still text us before.
You have to do it now. You have to text us before Friday.
Yes. Don't miss out.
Wouldn't that be cool? It could arrive on your birthday if you win the draw.
There you go. All the more reason to do it if your birthday is the 30th of June. But if your birthday is anywhere between the 1st and the 30th, please text us in. These are pretty cool books.
Yeah. Some good stuff there. So what was your favorite part of the show today, guys?
Good question. I think I enjoyed the story of the three guys standing up to the King Nebuchadnezzar. That's pretty amazing courage and a great demonstration of faith. We're going to find out what happens to them tomorrow.
Yeah.
So come back. Oh,
man, these guys are inspirational to me. I look up to them and I agree. I'm keen to figure out what actually happens to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego as they stand up to the king and do not bow down to his image. You know what else I liked, Lawson? Sorry, not Lawson. Dan. Anyway, what I liked, Dan, was the segment today when you were sharing the news segment. I really enjoyed hearing about, what was that man's name on the news?
Michael Tate.
Yeah, Michael Tate. And I just thought it was very brave of him to be sharing what he shared and to be, you know, openly sharing that God can forgive him even though he's done X, Y, and Z, all this sort of stuff. God can always forgive us. God can always forgive us. It's a message that I personally relate to. Everyone who's been a Christian and everyone who knows anything about anyone, we can all agree that we've all done things that we're not proud of it. We're ashamed of it. And if we could take it back, we would. And so that was really, really encouraging for me this morning.
I think the same thing between him and David was also that they waited until they were found out, which is sad.
Yes, true. Yep.
You know, we should be repenting before our sin is pointed out to us or found out by others. He's been exposed for his sin, I guess, you know, and so now he's repenting. The ideal scenario would be to repent first, and the even more ideal scenario would be to not commit the sin, of course, but we are fallen human beings and we do sin. But yeah, he did. Now that it's been pointed out and the humility is coming down, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, praying that it's genuine.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Join us again tomorrow. Same crew will be here. Remember to talk faith, live faith, and act faith, and you will grow strong in Jesus Christ.
I'll be with you till we meet again. God be with you till we meet again. By his counsel's guide uphold you, with his sheep securely fold you. God be with you. Until we meet again at Jesus' feet.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.